pretty much everybody should care about intellectual property today.
Intellectual property. Songs, images, films, brands, trademarks, generally ideas that have a value of any kind, are a tough concept to wrap your head around. How do we know the value of an idea? How do we know whether it's been stolen or used inappropriately? How do we know who owns the idea, or in the case of an idea which has multiple creators, who owns how much of that idea? Because these questions are so complicated, most organizations leave them to the creative minds of the legal department. But in the aptly titled book, Intellectual Property Strategy, John Palfrey offers a straightforward breakdown of intellectual property so that organizations can play with the creative works that they own and take better advantage of their value. The book is just released from MIT Press. Palfrey sat down with David Weinberger to talk more about intellectual property.
Pretty much everybody should care about intellectual property today. I think one thing that's different about it from a couple hundred years ago when we started with intellectual property in the United States is it matters to everybody. It matters to our kids as they're learning and remaking materials in a digital age, like remixing videos and audio and writing on blogs and linking to things. But it also matters to everybody who is responsible for an organization. And the purpose of this book, Intellectual Property Strategy, is to provide a primer, a basic starting point, but based in the latest ideas of how a manager might think about their organization with respect to IP.
The old idea is the sword and shield. Can you explain that?
Sure. So the mantra that we've heard for a long time in the field of management and so forth is that intellectual property functions as a sword and a shield. Basic idea is you can use it to skewer your opponent. That's the sword part. You can sue them. You can do something with it that would get them some fashion. Or as a shield, it allows you to have a mode of protection when somebody comes at you with their sword. And I argue that that is a self-limiting way to think about intellectual property, that there are times when you want to use your intellectual property, I suppose, to skewer somebody or to protect yourself. But there are many other ways to think about it that actually are more fruitful for this particular moment in history.
Such as
rethinking of intellectual property as a very flexible and important asset class rather than as a sword and a shield. So just as you think about your balance sheet as having capital of various sorts as assets, and you have a series of liabilities, of course, that you should also think about your intellectual property as part of that asset base, and that it can do many different things for you, much as cash can do lots of things for you when you're in an organization, whether for-profit or non-profit.
So in addition to being a shield or a sword, it could also be used in other ways as an asset. And what are some of those other ways?
So I think the most simple way to think about it is it's something that you can use to generate revenue. So it is a resource that you have, is an asset that you have, where by sharing it with other people, allowing other people to use it to some extent, you can get licensing revenue. So I spend a fair amount of time in this book, Intellectual Property Strategy, talking about, for instance, the patent space and the trademark space. These are two areas where there are multi-billion dollar markets for the licensing of intellectual property that firms and others have. So imagine you are a big biotech firm or you're a big information technology firm. These are kinds of businesses that do billions of dollars a year in business by sharing their IP with others, allowing other people to exploit it in various ways, never in these contexts skewering somebody or using it protectively, but rather sharing it. And I actually think there are many more interesting angles to it as well. The democratization of innovation, the idea that people who are your customers may well give you intellectual property for free. They may give you ideas that they want you to exploit. So there are a whole range of ways to see intellectual property that may help you achieve your business goals, but are not either framed by this sword or shield metaphor.
In the case of customers who are giving you IP, first of all, can you give us an example of that and what a proper, useful response would be to that sort of offer?
Sure. So there are many. They're easiest to see in the information technology space, but that's not the only place where they appear. You might think about, for instance, if you are a company rolling out a new browser and you give it to people to try out, a beta version of it, for instance, and they give you lots of feedback, that is, to my mind, giving you free intellectual property. They're giving you ideas of things you might do with that browser that they can't do, or problems they see with it that they wish you would fix. They're not asking for money back, and they may well be adding to something that itself will have intellectual property for you, and I think that's very important. Another way to see it is in the context of the social web or web 2.0, where, for instance, people will develop applications that run on your platform and which will generate value for you. So, for instance, if you are Facebook or you are Twitter or others and you open your application programming interfaces, your APIs, to allow other people to develop third-party applications, and they do so, those are creating bridges and a broader IP ecosystem that will itself drive traffic and revenue and various things back to you. Certainly the smartphone business, as it explodes the Android and iTunes and iPad, iPod universe, are examples of this as well, where lots of people are doing lots of interesting IP development on other people's platforms for free in their own self-interest, but which makes a rising tide lifting all boats.
This would include ways to use intellectual property to make your business or your, in case of software, your application more generative.
Exactly. So you make your system generative in the sense that you open it up to others. You give them the opportunity to build upon it, and then they in turn make it more generative by, in fact, generating the new stuff and allowing other people to build on top of that. And it allows for you to capture greater value over time. If your platform like Twitter continues to be something on which people build at multiple layers, the power that you have and the value that you have in your underlying technology and IP only continues to grow. I think that is a particularly distinctive feature of today's information communication technology marketplace that has application both in that field but more broadly as well.
To my mind, that actually sounds like the opposite of an asset. An asset often is that which you gain. So I'm not speaking technically, right? So, but an asset is often thought of by businesses as something that they get value from by owning and holding on to, as opposed to what sounds in this case like gaining benefit from letting go of some of the control over the IP.
I call it a flexible asset class really for that purpose, which is to say you have to think more broadly about what an asset is and exactly whether or not you can control it in your sort of every possible respect and make every decision associated with it, or if in fact it's something that you are growing and developing over time in part by letting go in ways that you suggest. So partly that's the core of the argument that I'm making, which is that people should see this much more broadly and see their range of options as much broader. Sometimes giving stuff away is a really good idea for the purpose of achieving the goals of your organization, and it may in fact lead to greater intellectual property on your balance sheet in the literal sense, or it may allow you to enter other markets that you didn't expect to, or it may mean that people use your systems to do something completely wonderful that relies upon you and that will create new lines of business for you into the future.
And if asserting ownership rights over that new line would kill that new line, just keep people from contributing and participating, then clearly that's a type of use that would be ill-advised.
That's exactly right. So I'm not saying that you never should assert control over something that you have. So if you have a very powerful trademark, for instance, and you are Coca-Cola and people are abusing that trademark in some fashion, you have a choice there, right? Is whether or not you protect that IP in that way. But I'm arguing that broadly, particularly with respect to these kinds of generative systems that we're seeing emerge in the information space, that it does make sense, in fact, to have a looser grip over how people use it. In fact, affirmatively to find ways that people can plug into it and do things with your intellectual property. And I make this argument as well in the context of nonprofits, which I think is an important other aspect to the argument. So even if you're not a CEO of a for-profit, profit-maximizing kind of entity, but you are the CEO, say, of a museum or a library or a school, I think you can use intellectual property in lots of ways that will help you achieve your mission. So some very specific ones that I think are familiar: Children's Television Workshop for a long time has had a licensing revenue stream by virtue of letting people put their characters on things that they sell in the supermarket. This has nothing to do with the information technology space, but imagine the experience of walking down the aisle of the supermarket with your four-year-old, and they see two bottles of apple juice there, right? The one that is the plain brand, and it's $2 for a really big bottle, and next to it for $4 for a smaller bottle is the one that has Elmo on it. Which one do you end up leaving the store with? Usually the Elmo one, because the four-year-old makes such a stink that they want that particular one. The $2 in that particular instance is split between the person selling the apple juice and Children's Television Workshop. And in that particular case, Children's Television Workshop also gets the benefit of people seeing Elmo everywhere. So this is an example example where for-profits and non-profits may have ways to work together and also might see things together. But there are ways in which the non-profit space is different as well. So one difference might be in the world of libraries, for instance, if you have a series of assets that are works in your collection, it may make sense to give those away entirely, to do everything you can to digitize them and to put them on the web and to contextualize them and give free metadata and put them broadly into the ecosystem. This is something that may serve our goals, right? We may not be exactly exploiting our intellectual property in a way that you might think, which is licensing or selling it, but by giving it away, you're actually achieving your mission. Your mission might be to enhance scholarship or to inform the world of discourse in a particular field. And by giving stuff away, you may be, in fact, meeting that the terms of that mission.
So if we take this as a flexible asset class, are there generalizations that can be made about different types of assets? For example, a brand. Are there general things to be said about how tightly or loosely or how to make that more flexible?
It's a very hard question. So one of the distinctions I draw in the book is between four primary kinds of intellectual property. So brands, generally speaking, are trademarks or service marks. These are things that can be used very easily in the licensing context. In other words, you don't have to exploit it yourself. You can let somebody else exploit it, use it as a mark on something else, and get money from it. But it's something that people tend to protect somewhat more shield-like in terms of the kind of standard business practice. And I don't think that's wrong in many ways, that there is value in the brand. You have to worry about its dilution, what it's associated with, and so forth. You don't want to hold on to it too tightly. You can harm the brand by holding on too tight. And there are some examples that are in the context of copyright where that happens. So Disney suing people for selling piñatas with their characters in South Central LA in stores that had dirt floors didn't exactly help the Disney brand, in my view. That was probably a tarnishing of that, for instance, by virtue of asserting intellectual property too aggressively. So there are times when holding on too tight is not so great. If you look at copyright, that's a little bit different, right? There are contexts in which, again, as a publisher or an author, you might very well wish to be giving away your works on the web, maybe a chapter or two or the entire book. And sometimes you, frankly, don't want that to happen. You want to sell the book for 25 years in a bound format. Everything is miscellaneous. And then you'll give it away when the rights revert to you. And that may be the appropriate strategy. Patent is yet another, a third one, which has a great deal of sort of opportunity there in a broad spectrum. And the last one, the last important aspect of intellectual property is trade secret. That is, by its very nature, something that you don't want to be sharing. So I would never make the argument that you should give away all your trade secrets. They would no longer be trade secrets, and that would be pointless. So it does depend on the context, the moment, and the type of intellectual property, and I think you can generalize to some extent down those various lines.
I understand that intellectual property is the term of art. But it contains a metaphor within it, a property metaphor. Does that metaphor work for what you are describing, what you're recommending?
It does work on a certain level. So this book is one where I take the legal regime as it is. I say I do have views about what the legal regime should be in intellectual property, but for this purpose, I'm making a very pragmatic set of arguments to organizations that they should think more broadly about this asset class. And I think if you take the law as it is, it works pretty well. Intellectual property is not the same as real property in a variety of ways. The primary difference is this idea of non-rivalrous goods. If I have a car or a home, real property in that sense, physical property, those are things where only one person can enjoy them at the same time, or a house, I guess your whole family can or whatever. But the point is, not everybody can be using it at the same time. With an idea, in the case of patent, or expression in the case of copyright, sometimes the more people who are using them, the better. They actually may get more value by virtue of having more people using them. And in any event, the fact that a second person is using it doesn't, on its face, diminish the value to the first person. It may be capturing a market that you otherwise could capture and so forth, but it's not itself rivalrous to your usage. So there are very important distinctions between the two, but for the purposes of this argument, it's not a terrible metaphor. I don't love it for the reasons I suggested, but I don't quarrel with it. I do, at the end of the book, have a short chapter, sort of an afterword, where I reveal my own views. I say to the reader, if you've gotten this far, fair enough, I should tell you what I really think about intellectual property. And my view is that a balance between creators and the public broadly has swung too far toward creators in a general sense, and that further adjustment that would have, in many respects, a looser intellectual property regime would be better for innovation, would be better for society in a variety of ways. But that's not the point of the book. I declare that. I give you that as my normative prior. But I am taking the world as it is for the purpose of this text.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
John Palfrey is the Henry N. S. Professor of Law and the Vice Dean for Library and Information Resources at Harvard Law School, and the author of Intellectual Property Strategy, which is on the bookshelves now. Palfrey will be speaking about his book at Harvard. If you're in the Boston area on November 21st, you can catch his talk, find out how to RSVP, and get a sample of the book over at our blog, blogs.law.harvard.edu/mediaberkman. Theme music today comes from Learning Music Monthly and TJ Morgan. All of our episodes are Creative Commons licensed, so feel free to reuse, remix, or use them as a sword or shield. Just not in the legal sense of the word. This episode of Radio Berkman was produced by me, Daniel Dennis Jones, with David Weinberger at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts.